Reckon you're pretty funny? I know I do sometimes at home when I'm alone. I think I'm hilarious. Other people probably will disagree. I also think because I watch loads of TV that I could write a sitcom. Maybe you've had that thought as well. Well, today, maybe this opportunity can be taken advantage of because I'm not sure if you knew, there is a formula that sitcoms follow, an actual formula. And once you see it, you just can't unsee it. Doesn't say, though, that you can create the magic of a perfect sitcom. We can just give you the formula. The ABC's Christopher Hollow and screenwriter and story producer Chelsea Cassio are here. They're going to reveal all. Hello.
Hello there, Miff. How are you going?
I'm good. What's the key to a sitcom? And I'm not talking about a great sitcom, but the key to the formula of a sitcom. What are the rules? Are there rules?
I'll start. Drama. Conflict equals drama, right, mm-hmm. Chelsea?
Yeah, true.
And mm-hmm. confinement and conflict equals a sitcom. Basically, it's conflict, but it's in a small space, a space that you can't leave, that you feel compelled to be in, that you can't, you want to get out, but you just can't. Now, that can be like your apartment or work place. You're just compelled to be there. You can't get out.
Yeah. Is that why they're all set in houses usually or apartments?
That's right. Well, they started off being like in front of live audiences with maybe one or two sets. Mm-hmm. And we haven't really gone too far away from that on your classic sitcom.
Yeah.
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 But, yeah, so it's conflict and confinement equals sitcom drama.
Sounding like a good prison drama, really. Yeah. Conflict and
just
confinement.
Just do that and you'll have yourself a sitcom.
You've got it. Yeah, what do you reckon?
Look, I think it's coming from a storytelling perspective, it is heavily templated, as are feature films and one-hour dramas, but the sitcom tends to open with a teaser and it might be 1 or 2 minutes. And it's usually a three-act structure. So going into the first act, the hero or protagonist will have a particular dilemma that's happened, and it's kind of like life. We find ourselves in these dilemmas. From that dilemma, we need to change our lives, and therefore we have a goal. So within the first act, there is a goal established. And by about, leading into act two, you have obstacles to those goals and escalated obstacles, and then finally a resolution in act three. Something specific to sitcoms might be the fact that they're episodic. Obviously, they're self-contained. You don't have to tune in, to the next episode to find out what's happening with that particular cliffhanger. And another thing might be that their goal is a little bit, perhaps it's not necessarily life-changing. It might be sort of on a smaller scale, the particular goal that hero has each episode.
So nothing too much to happen in a sitcom.
Should I put something out? Like, as a sitcom, what about these strange bedfellows? Chelsea and I, we've never met each other, but we've been thrown into a situation where we've been offered cheap rent. Okay, but funnily enough, it's actually a single bed, and that's that's the thing. So we've just met each other, and so we've got we're both keen to save money because of past problems that will come out, and we've got a single bed, and we've got a landlord. You're the landlord,
yeah. Okay,
and you're a bit batty. You're a bit kind of
totally. I knock on the door at all hours.
That's right. You're a free spirit.
Yeah.
And so you're kind of like a sage, but you're an antagonist as well.
Yeah.
And so Chelsea and I are kind of fighting out who's going to have that bed. Are we actually even going to do this?
Mm.
And so we spend maybe 10 minutes kind of toing and froing about whether this can actually work. Suddenly you come in. You're a free spirit. You come in naked.
Great. That's as I do every day.
That's right.
Kind of like you are now.
Yeah, exactly.
And so suddenly we've got another problem, which is kind of above the whole idea. It's your house, so you can do what you want.
That's true.
Maybe you should hit some canned laughter. So, like, when you come in, this is what happens when you're naked. Oh,
that's the reaction I always
That is the reaction that you get because suddenly you're not, and because it's an American sitcom, it's not a European kind of SBS type show. There's all kind of different angles as to show your nakedness, but not show your nakedness.
That's
but
right.
There's a lot of reaction from me. It turns out that I'm a prude. Chelsea's kind of okay with it. She's kind of like
I'm fine. You're a nudist.
She's a free spirit too.
Naturist.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm kind of like freaking out, and so suddenly we've got ourselves an issue.
So that's the issue in the show. And then what happens when it's resolved? Let's get creative here.
Well, the thing is, when it does get resolved, like the resolution to this problem is probably the fact that we work out that we can actually stay in the single bed together without it necessarily being kind of too freaky.
Top and tail.
That's right. And then by the end of the episode, we also work out that we can deal with your nakedness. How can we deal with that? I'm not exactly sure at this point, but there's a lot of jokes and a lot of canned laughter.
And that's a continuity through line, isn't it? If the nakedness.
That's right.
For you, perhaps, yeah. That's your trope. Yeah. That's your character.
Well, that's another element of sitcoms, isn't it? We're getting to the formula of sitcoms here. I've got Christopher Hollow, who's an ABC producer. I work with Chris. He's a musician. He's an ex-footy player and also a screen and script writer.
I'm going to stop you there, Miff. Basically, you're saying I'm a jack of all trades, but a master of none.
I never added master of none to that, no. You did
but
that.
That's basically your classic sitcom character.
Of course.
You know, smart enough for wisecracks, dumb enough to make the same mistakes over and over and over again.
Okay, I'm starting to see the formula. And
yes.
Chelsea Cassio also knows what she's on about because she's a story producer who's just finished working on a crime series that you can see on Stan called Bulldog's Alley. Mm-hmm. And has also written for things like Dr. Blake Mysteries and a whole bunch of other things, Secret Bridesmaids Business, a heap of stuff. So you know what you're talking about. When it comes to sitcoms, you mentioned the trope. There's something, there's one thing over and over and over again that someone would repeat. Now, I came up with one, a catchphrase. Is a trope a catchphrase?
It can be.
Can be.
Yeah,
similar.
Something specific to that character, definitely.
I think you'll remember this one.
1 minute late.
You're lucky to have me at all, Captain Peacock. I had to throw my pussy out before I came.
Mrs. Slocum, Mr. Rumbold would like to know why you're late.
Well, the central heating broke down. I had to light the oven and hold my pussy in front of it. Well, if I'm to spend an evening in this club, there'll have to be accommodation for my pussy. Mr. Humphreys, leave my pussy alone.
Those were the days.
Doesn't get old.
It doesn't actually.
Are you
enough,
being served? It's actually cost Mrs. Slocum.
It's actually been regenerated, like on The Office. The catchphrase is "That's what she said." So
yes,
and in Archer, they'll say phrasing. So you know the line might be like you know, oh, that is really hard. That's what she said. You really think you could go all day long? Oh, that's what she said. Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling. Oh, that's what she said.
I get it now. Yeah. So you just repeat. You've got a couple of examples here, Chris, a little montage of some of your favourites. What have you got in this montage?
Oh, let's have a listen.
Okay.
No, that's good. That's what she said.
My mother's coming.
That's what she said. No, but okay.
Hello, Newman.
Oh! Hi, Caramba.
Ha, ha. Oh, they're all there, aren't they? Lots from The Simpsons as well. So many characters have catchphrases.
The catchphrase is it's different to a trope, and but it's really important for a catchphrase to take on to make a show work. And all of those catchphrases that we just heard then really work. And the way that they work is if you use them in your everyday life, like. I still use "get smart," kind of missed it by that much. Those type of catchphrases.
Or if someone, it's good to know you've refreshed your contemporary references too.
Well, if someone asks me how my day is going, I'll say I'll just find myself saying pretty good, and which is Larry David, you know, Curb Your Enthusiasm. And if you get the catchphrase right, and it goes into everyday life and people use it, that's when you know. Either the characters are working, the catchphrase is working, and the show is working.
Well, yeah, and it's also really great publicity as well
for
the show.
Chelsea, you picked an absolute cracker, and I think people will enjoy this one. Kath and Kim, they have so many catchphrases that really they went global. Let's listen.
There's some very pretty names around at the moment,
yeah.
Kim. I've got Winona, Paloma, Papaloma.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. Kimmy, look at me, please. Look at me. Now, I've got one word to say to you, Kim. Me family.
What?
Me family, Kathleen, Darlene, Craig, for the baby. I think it's a beautiful name. So can we settle on the family, can we?
Mum, I'm not having we in my baby's name.
Oh, well, all right. Girls, can we have a powwow, please? Come on, sit down. I really want to get this name sorted out, toot sweet, as of today. Come on.
Toot Suite as of today, and Mfatanwy, which is my name. Amazing. I love that I got a line in
nice.
Captain Kim.
Different. Unusual.
Unusual, yes. Exactly. And they didn't get the best joke there. When people get my full name, Mfatanwy, wrong, they don't say Mfatanwy, they say my Fanny.
Oh, no.
First day at uni, I remember they read out the class list and I sat there and said, my Fanny wore Hurst. And I went, oh, God.
Oh, that's what she said.
And you're like, just
that's yeah. what you did there. Yes. Boom, tish. No, it's fascinating. It's the more you look into it, the more obvious it becomes, doesn't it, the formula to writing a sitcom. But it doesn't necessarily make a sitcom good, does it?
It's how you treat that material. It's you can't just sort of slap a structure over it and, you know, hope for the best. But it's really interesting to see that something like Seinfeld or Friends or Roseanne has the same structure as Veep and 30 Rock and Breaking Bad, even the shows that moved you and changed you fundamentally as a writer have the same structure, ultimately, if you pare it back. So, yeah, it's not just about the structure.
The thing is about that is with TV, it's kind of almost the inverse of film. So in film, there's a same structure, three-act structure, but the difference is that the character will go through a journey and they'll change by the end. They'll actually go through something where they started out this type of person, but by the end of they're this type of person, and we go through that huge journey. And that pretty much is every film. Whereas with TV shows, Sam Malone, for instance, from Cheers, is the same in the first scene that we see him as to the last scene. He's gone through a lot of stuff, but in that last scene that we. If a beautiful woman walks through the bar, he might go through that whole series again because he will make all those same mistakes again because he's basically the same person.
So they never really change.
Well, that's the really big question. I mean, with a character, they have a goal and that's their want, but when you access a character's core need, that's when the show is over. So, for example, Will and Grace, they probably don't realise how slightly toxic their relationship is, and if they left each other and went off and pursued other people, they might form more holistic romantic relationships. But really they need to stay broken. They need to remove themselves from their core need in order to for this situation to continue and for it to be so fun to watch. So with film, you do ultimately access the character's core need, but in sitcoms, they do change slightly but not fundamentally. So, yeah.
Favourite sitcoms? Can I ask that question, or is that too hard for two people who write for screen?
I love, your Parks and Recreation. I think we've gone through a golden age of sitcoms in the last 10 or 15 years. Parks and Recreation, 30 Rock, The Office, Spaced, which was a great...
brilliant.
Larry Sanders and Alan Partridge, that kind of thing. But one of my favourites actually was one that didn't really work. Like when I was in college, I used to come home to make sure I watched Herman's Head. Now, Herman's Head is like the precursor to The Simpsons. It was all the same writers. And there was a guy who had like five or six voices in his head. And so we
remember it.
Anyway, that was one of my favourites. Didn't work. And why didn't it work? I don't really know. But they went on to do The Simpsons, so they got it right in the end.
Yeah. What about you, Chelsea?
Oh, Community would be my favourite. I don't know if you guys have seen that.
Yes.
Set at a community school. And Broad City as well.
Oh, yes.
Love that show. That's what we need here in Australia. Two girls navigating the 20s. Well, again, look,
Let's do it again. Look, I will get to that, what's going on in Australia with sitcoms. Got a message here from David in Murriduck who says, Yes, Minister was the first political sitcom I can remember. It explored the machinations of public service as the pseudo-government versus the elected government and the power struggles that ensued. That script was crafted superbly and brilliantly brought to life by a great cast.
So true, and it's reflected today in what's our biggest Rob Sitch
Utopia.
Utopia is basically Yes Minister or Yes Prime Minister of the modern world.
Let's get to Australia's situation with sitcoms. We haven't really pumped out many in the last few years, or not as many as perhaps we used to. There was a whole lot of them, if I remember rightly, in the 80s when I was growing up.
King's Little Country?
Yeah, probably. Yeah,
not sure if I want to remember some parts of that.
Pickle me grandmother.
A few catchphrases in there that need to be left in the 70s. What's happened? What's going on? Where are the great sitcoms in Australia to be found, Christopher and Chelsea?
I think they're still out there. I think, like, we had Kath and Kim and, yeah, obviously Kingswood Country and Hey Dad and things like that. But I think that the way that we're telling comedy is a bit different. So shows such as The Family Law and Here Come the Habibs and Upper Middle Bogan and such, I mean, they're still considered sitcoms. We're just telling them in a different way. I think we're too evolved to have a live studio audience. What's laugh track with? Kind of. Yeah, where is it? There it is.
It feels weird it's here in Australia, weird. Doesn't it? It
totally.
Feels strange to those of us who...
It's too heightened and theatrical for our Australian sensibilities.
Is that what it is? Is that why we don't use it so much? Or that, who does? Where has it been used in Australia?
In Australia is a good question.
Probably Hey Dad.
Was Kingswood Country a laugh track? I don't know.
It was, totally. It was, yes. Mm.
But then it's gone.
Yeah, it's... Well... Basically, the Office, for instance, kind of created a whole new genre of situation comedies, and that was by using that kind of mockumentary style. And we've kind of taken on that a little bit in Australia too, where they've kind of broken the fourth wall, which means, you know, there's a lot of characters who are looking at the camera and kind of eliciting the same reaction, making sure that the audience knows that they know that what your reaction is to whatever has just happened. And that's kind of really broken open the way that comedies are done these days.
Yeah. Chris Hollow's with me. He's here at the ABC as a producer. He's a musician, ex-footy player and script writer, screenwriter, all the things. Chelsea Cassio is also a story producer, and you've been working on loads of different productions. Let's get to the reality of it. Is it really easy to write a sitcom, given you know the formula, or is it one of the hardest jobs you can do as a creative person?
I think writing is one of the hardest jobs in the world, but I'm going to say that, aren't I? I think there's so much to consider. You're building a character, if it's a single character, that's apart from it being an ensemble, you're building a character or person from scratch, from the blank page, which I think is just the hardest thing. And then on top of that, you have to work towards your particular genre. So if it's a comedy, that's kind of like a software add-on to your screenwriting brain that you have to then sort of understand. And then there's, as you know, Chris, plot and theme and style and structure and story and, you know, all these other things that you have to know. And all of those elements have to work together. If you pull out one of those elements and it comes crashing down, then you've kind of got a good story because all of them are relied on each other. So it's really hard. It's really difficult.
It's hard to write a great song. It's hard to write a great movie. It's hard to write a great sitcom, even though they've all been broken down. You know in a song that the chorus has to come in 40 seconds. You know that there has to be three hooks. But... the hardest thing is to come up with those things.
That's
same with
right.
the sitcom. You know, there has to be a joke at the start. There has to be a dilemma at the start. By the end, it has to all be wrapped up without the characters necessarily being damaged in any way, shape or form.
They have to stay the same.
So the audience kind of, you know, they can come in on this show at any time and pick it up really, really easily and... So it's actually very hard.
Okay.
Chris and Chelsea,
I feel like I'm going to need to get you back on because there's another conversation to be had here about drama and soap opera and serials and the formula that goes into that. But when it comes to just quickly today, when it comes to writing for perhaps, say, a serial, because I know you wrote for Neighbours,
yes.
Chris, and you've also written for the Dr. Blake Mysteries, Chelsea, and various others. Is there much of a difference between writing a sitcom and a drama?
I guess the main difference is genre.
Also not funny, necessarily.
Well, but it's funny because producers really want those humorous lines in there. So you do sort of need to have a comedy slant. But if you sort of don't want to dishearten listeners as well and say it's really impossible and don't do it. But there's this really cool thing where back in the day when people used to shoot on 35 millimetre, and I think that equals like 1,000 feet, which equals 11 minutes. Every 11 minutes when people were in a cinema, they had to change the reel over. So there's like the, you know, there's a break in storytelling every 11 minutes. And I think we're still accustomed to things changing at that time. So anyone out there who wants to write, just try and have those turning points at sort of 10 or 11 minute marks, and then just do that and everything else you need to do.
You are really bringing the science.
Oh, is that science?
Yeah, that is science.
Oh, all right.
I don't know about that.
Well, I think we need to get you back to talk about that, because that's equally as fascinating to me, because I do love a good soap opera. Lots of texts coming in about their favourite, about people's favourite sitcoms. This one from someone who said, Utopia, hands down. This show is not fiction. In fact, their scenarios are based on real events that have occurred in government departments over the years, says Ian, a government worker for over 30 years.
That is when a show is working, is when you can totally recognise it in your own life. You're sitting in the office going, this is a utopia moment.
Absolutely. Someone else has written Fawlty Towers, the greatest of all time. Thank you, Greg. You got a fan of Herman's Head.
Oh, excellent.
On the text line.
It's the other guy who loves it.
Yeah. Funnily enough, I loved Fawlty Towers as a kid as well, but it used to really frustrate me as a seven-year-old going, why are they choosing this course of action? Like, I would just be rolling on the floor just going, no!
I agree. Same with Adam, was it Spencer? In the little Beetle and in the car, and he always mucked things up. No, not Mr. Bean, pre-Mr. Bean. He was like the first.
Just hit the laugh track.
Oh, she's so funny.
So funny when you can't remember what the actor that played that part.
Oh, he went on to be Phantom of Opera.
He was the Phantom
of the Opera in England in the original cast.
Oh, gosh.
What's his name? No one knows. Were you not alive in the 80s, any of you? Can someone please answer me on the text line 0467921? He was a bumbling fool. He was an English actor, and the show, I can't. Frank Spencer! Not Adam Spencer, ex-ABC.
Some others do have him?
That's
it. Is that it? Okay.
That used to annoy the hell out of me.
You threw me a Beetle. I was like, who was sitting in their Beetle for that long?
Oh, Miff. Through me.
Thrown. Hey, this has been unreal. Someone else, Steve in Camden, has said, I recall the Seinfeld writers had a motto, no hugging, no learning.
See, a character doesn't change. No hugging, no learning.
Well,
it's brilliant.
This is brutal. I feel a bit broken by hearing all these stark realities about sitcoms.
You know that George Costanza in that last episode of Seinfeld is making the same mistakes that he made in that very first episode. And we loved him for it.
It never changed. Mm. Never changed.
You burn.
Can't stand you. Oh, you do. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thanks for
my
family.
Thank you. Please call me my funny.
Miff Warhurst. Weekdays on ABC Radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.